Valley with Tony Simpson, Ryan Champion and Jack Bennion.
Hello everyone, welcome to Absolute Rally. It's good to be back. It's your weekly podcast. It's we're recording a little bit early this week, of course, because I will be departing, I will be disappearing to do Rally Isle of Man, which we'll be talking about, or the Manx International, whatever you want to call it, but I'll be nicking off over there shortly. I've just come back from doing a two-day recce over there, and a bit later on the programme, you'll hear me talking to the man who I couldn't ask for better advice. We got Mark Higgins on, of course, a former winner who's returning in an R5 car to go and try and upset some of the youngsters. And yeah, as I say, we're going to be talking to Mark a little bit later on, and also talking to the Mac, Colin McMaster, who, of course, if you're familiar with WRC photography, you're going to be familiar with probably most of his images, and he's got some great stories for us as well. But before we do all that, we always do the news, we always do the headlines, and at this point, I always say, hello, Jack Bennion.
Hello, Tony Simpson.
And I say, hello, Ryan Champion.
Hello, Tony Simpson and Jack Bennion.
There you go. You haven't mixed it up this week, right?
Because I knew you paused and you were waiting for it, weren't you?
I was.
And it's like when you said the Merck, you were trying to say the Merck in McLean, weren't you? And you didn't quite get around to that either. But you were thinking about it. I knew you were thinking
about it. I was thinking about it, yeah. Thanks. Yeah. Cheers, right? I love the support that you fellas give me.
Well, that's it. We're just here to help. When the bits you miss out, we fill in. It's fine.
Yeah. Now, just because, yeah, do you know what it is? There's a bit of a loving going on already between you two. Because obviously, before we start this, there is some loose planning that goes into this podcast. For those who are listening, believe it or not, there is some loose plan. And there's a little bit of we have our kind of text between the three of us of what's going to be coming up and stuff like that. And Ryan always sends us pictures, not inappropriate pictures. That'd be wrong. Not like Jimmy Savile or anything like that, but pictures of what's going on around him at that particular moment. And he sent us a picture of his cup of coffee just as he settled down, getting ready to start recording the podcast with us. And it, just in the background, there was a little image of a Sierra Cosworth. And
Don't give it away, because this might have to be a quiz question.
Okay, straight away, Jack Bennion was straight in there telling Ryan who it was and what rally it was from. And verbally, Ryan just gave him a little gold star. And Jack's happy now. And I got it wrong. And they're buzzing between themselves. I'm not saying that they're ganging up on me.
And when this podcast drops, I'll put it out there without the names on it, obviously, for and see who identifies it first.
Yeah,
I should point out the delivery was from before my birth as well.
The delivery was from before your birth. Immediately before your birth, was it kind of going past the maternity ward at that point or something? Right before my birth, right before I became into it, was actually 9 months one day. There you go. Anyway, boys, we digress as we always seem to do. I've got loads of any other business, by the way, this week, which we need to do at the end of this section. And I hope you've got your... I've got some interesting ones this week. It's suddenly turned into any other business now. Right, you raised the bar, it has to be said. And to be fair, Jack's done some crackers as well. And now I've kind of gone with the scattergun effect where I've just gone with three or four kind of quick ones.
I'm not sure that's within the spirit, you know. You're supposed to have one. And exceptionally two, but you can't just have four or five just to make up for your poor ones.
Yeah. Hang on, who said they were poor? And as you pointed out before, my podcast, my rules. Anyway, at this point, we always do headlines and pages 2 and 3, which I've said are the golden pages at MN. And Jack, headline 2 and 3, FIA declared that the 2017 cars will be the safest yet.
Yeah, we talked a lot about the safety next year, haven't we, and what the faster cars can mean. Obviously, we're getting quicker cars next year with the active diffs and all the stuff that's going on with the engines and stuff, and we've got a new set of cars. So the FIA are trying to help the teams to create safer cars for the crews. One of the main things that's been happening is that VW have been doing some extensive test work at their base in Germany, and probably one of the most interesting things of the piece, I think, actually, is that Volkswagen have been sharing that data that they've been gathering with the other teams. So the safety tests they've been doing, they've been crashing cars into holes and stuff like that to try and work out where the weakest points of the car is and strengthen it. And they've shared that data with the other teams, which is quite nice, I think. But nice to know that the FIA are taking the safety stuff seriously, and also nice to know that the teams are as well.
right? It's to be fair, I'm kind of chopping the article down into the least amount of words here, but there's been a big thing about side impact protection, and as I say, just alluding to what Jack's been talking about there, going it sliding into, you know, poles at 20, 25 mile an hour as well, and measuring G and things like that. This is a relative new thing. It seems odd, doesn't it? It seems odd that we're now embracing, if you put, is that even the right way of putting it, but we're actually now looking at side impact. You know, everyone always assumes it's front, but, you know, so many times I've seen cars go off sideways, and obviously we lost the late great Beef, you know, with a sideways motion accident. Are we surprised that now it's at 2016 that we're talking about, you know, moving forward with that type of protection?
I think that there's always been, you know, there has always been developments in safety, but it's an acknowledged weakness of the car that side impacts are, you know, the weakest area of the car. There's less metal between you and the side of the car than there is the back or the front. So inherently, that's tended to be the weaker area, and some of the, you know, the nasty accidents we've seen have come from side impacts. But I think what's brilliant news in this is that the teams are working together on it. You know, I think this is certainly the first time we've had a real cooperation between the leading teams and with the likes of Volkswagen doing those tests. I think that's fantastic news. The FIA have always driven safety on, but you know, I think it's great that there is this real push. We've seen a move towards keeping the crew further into the car, so further away from the door. We've seen this foam that's been put in on the World Rally cars between the head protection and the side of the car. You know, there has been developments over the last few years. Obviously, roll cage structures have got much stronger. If we look at roll cages now from where they were 20 years ago, I mean, God, I remember when I first started in my 205 GTI, the roll cage finished behind my feet. You know, and if you look back at that with no triangulation through to the front of the car. So, you know, there has been developments, but we can't stop with this. And I think it's great news that the FIA and the teams are moving this forward.
Absolutely, absolutely. Jack, just moving on from that, and again, we talk about Mr. Ogier, and he claims he's not going to try and get into a fight with Chris Meek on Corsica.
Yeah, it's very sensible of him, this, isn't it? He's saying that you know, he's not been fighting with Chris all year, and he doesn't feel like he needs to get any sort of revenge over the fact that Chris has had a couple of wins and beaten him on a couple of occasions. OJ saying that he's there for the championship at the end of the day, and I think, of course, credit is actually the first opportunity that OJ can win the title this year. He needs a lot of help from everybody else. I think he needs most of the front runners to retire for him to be able to mathematically take the title. So it'll be a difficult one for him to set up this weekend, but I think, you know, he's right to focus on the overall big picture rather than on Chris. But I think possibly maybe one of the equally as interesting things in the piece is the fact that he quite clearly identifies Chris as his main contender for next year, which is something we've talked about a little bit, isn't it, about how Citroën are likely to come to the fore again next year with what they're doing and building the car around Chris. So it'd be interesting to see whether that does happen.
Right, are we buying what Mr. Ogier is saying here? He craves competition, he craves fights. You know, in fairness, yes, he could clinch the championship on Corsica, but by the same token, if he didn't, it wouldn't be the end of the world because he'll just clinch it on the next one.
Well, I'm glad you phrased the question like that, because I had a wry smile on my face from the start of this piece. Yes, I'm sure that's what Ogier's saying publicly, but he's such a competitive person. Not only that, he's such a talented driver that you know, he can, with that car, which is so good, he, you know, to a degree can drive 1% inside himself and still be the dominant force on tarmac. We've not seen, you know, Chris on a dry tarmac rally this year to see what his pace will be, but Ogier is still going to take some beating on this rally. And yes, he will have the championship in the back of his mind, but let's face it, who's going to beat him to the world title? I still think he will be very keen to win this rally. If it's a real big fight, he isn't going to do anything stupid, but I also don't think he's going to give it away.
Jack, you buy into the headline, or are you as equally as sceptical as Ryan and myself?
I think it depends on what happens on the rally, but you know, if those two are the front two, which you would expect, wouldn't you, I guess, in terms of the overall event, then they're going to be fighting with each other. There's absolutely no doubt about that in my mind. Whether they can both stay in the event, obviously, is a different question. And you know, we know what rallying is like. But yeah, I think if they're both fighting for the win, they're not going to, you know, OJ's disengaged, is it? He's going to want to win that event. And I'm not sure about that at all, to be honest.
Now, Citroën, obviously, are still working towards their driver lineup for next year, and there's a piece that I picked up on Autosport, which I want to come to very, very shortly, guys, but, you know, at the moment, we know Chris is confirmed, and obviously, there's a bit of a trade-off at the moment. Obviously, Craig Breen is in with the shout, and, of course, unfortunately, Stefan Lefebvre, who had this horrendous accident on Rally Germany, and there's a piece here, Jack, with regards to his recovery and his intended comeback time.
Yeah, he wants to be back competing before the end of the year, which will be some achievement, won't it? After, if anyone saw the accident, you know, saw the car after it, and you know, there's quite some impact. There's still quite a way to go with the injuries involved, but he's hoping to be back before the end of the year. And you know, it really does put an interesting question over the drive lineup situation next year, doesn't it? The fact that he's not really going to, well, he's going to be unlikely to compete any WRC against this year, even if he does compete on an event, you know, it's unlikely that it will be a WRC event, I would have thought, after what he's gone through and the comeback time that he'll need. So, is he still a front runner for a seat at Citroën next year? I'm not so sure. It'd be interesting to see, but it'd be a shame if he didn't get a seat because of the fact that he's not been able to compete for the second half of this year.
Absolutely. I don't know about you boys, but I just can't. The more that time ticks by, and the more the quieter the Hyundai camp is with regards to Thierry Neuville, I can just see Thierry Neuville going back there. I really can.
I think you're right. I think you're absolutely right, because I do think Citroën will want two frontline drivers next year, and that's not to take anything away, you know, from Craig or from Lefebvre. It's just a fact of life that Citroën will want two frontline drivers who are established and proven winners at world championship level. You know, they're coming back with a fully fledged program, brand new car. They're there to win the championship. They're not there to play second fiddle to Volkswagen or even Hyundai, come to that. So, you know, I think any drive that we're talking about is a third drive. And I wouldn't be surprised at all if what you're saying happens and Neville's in the second car, because I do think they'll want a top line driver in there.
Do you think, and I'll come to you first, Jack, on this one, do you think Citroën will almost mirror image what Volkswagen have done? Because Volkswagen effectively have run a three-car team, haven't they? Now, obviously, there's the two nominated cars and there's the Volkswagen 2 team, but they've ran effectively three frontline cars.
Yeah, it's a difficult one, isn't it? I don't know if they'll want to use a third car to sort, you know, I think the big thing about next year is obviously cars are going to come on quickly, aren't they, with development and actually competing on the event. So you would have thought that Citroën would want to get a third car out for as quick as possible. But I guess the other thing with the drivers is, you know, it's one of the things that we don't see so much anymore about designated test drivers, do we? Because that's something from like the mid-90s and even into the 2000s where we saw drivers getting signed up as designated test drivers and doing a lot of the test work, which is something I don't seem to see too much of now. I know we've got different people testing the VW and the Citroën, but mostly it's you know, it's the drivers of the actual team, isn't it? The work drivers who do the majority of the testing. So we without other ringers just stepping in. So interesting to see if any of the teams pick up an actual test driver and keep someone fresh in that sense.
Boys, I want to go slightly left field and away perhaps from MM, but to the sister publication, Jack. I want to talk to you about this story that popped up again yesterday, or maybe the day before, I think, on my timeline with regards to Tommy Mäkinen talking to Sebastian Loeb and Petter Solberg.
Yeah, that's one that came about quite early last year as well, didn't it? You know, it's being talked about, I think.
Yeah.
It's an interesting one. I don't know if Loeb would be tempted away from Peugeot, so you'd have to sign a deal there. And obviously, if you'll see in MN today, we've got the new pictures of the new Dakar car that the Peugeot will be doing. And I think Loeb's got unfinished business there, and I think he's definitely got unfinished business in World Rallycross as well. Whether he can be tempted out of that, I don't know. You know, that's something that only Loeb can answer. But, you know, is he getting itchy feet now after being out of rallying for competitive rally for a while? I'm not so sure he is. I think he's quite happy with what he's doing, but obviously I'm not Loeb's best friend, so I wouldn't know.
Right, are you Loeb's best friend?
Unfortunately not, no. He'd be a good guy to bump into now and again, wouldn't he? I think Jack's right in what he's saying. I think he's enjoying doing other things. I'm sure the thought of going back to the World Championship appeals to him, taking the fight to Ogier, but when the actual reality strikes, does he want to go back to however many rallies we end up, 13, 14 rallies a year, whatever it is, you know, 60 flights a year, never been at home compared to what he's doing now, where he's yes, he's doing a series program in rallycross, but it's a lot less intensive in terms of his time. And I think, as we just talked about, I think Dakar is something he really wants to win now. And next year, he's obviously in a good position to do that with experience now. I think I'd be very surprised to see Sebastian Loeb back in the World Rally Championship full time. You know, because even if he did, how long would he do it for? He can't come back for a year, so maybe 2 years, but ultimately I think he's happy where he is. Petter Solberg, if he was given the opportunity, I could quite believe he'd jump at the chance, because Petter just seems pretty insatiable in his hunger for driving cars. I could believe Petter would do it, but I'm not sure we'll see him get the opportunity in a frontline car.
So you're not certain either of them?
I don't think so, really. I think we've moved on from that story, from that era. It would be, I wouldn't be surprised if we saw maybe Petter particularly testing a car. He's still keen to do rallies, isn't he? You know, he's talked about doing rallies recently. So I wouldn't be surprised to see him back in a rally car, but I just would be surprised to see him in a frontline drive for 2017.
Jack, are you with Ryan on this one, or have you got your own thoughts?
No, I think Ryan's probably right there. I think, you know, one of the big things I think's happened is, you know, it's been a massive step forward in terms of preparation for rallies and the amount of work that goes in the past couple of years. You know, you spoke to Meek on the podcast about the preparation that he does and how much video he was watching for some of the Finland stages. I think that's a bit that's happened quite recently and over the past few years. You know, the use of the video has become a lot more widespread and a lot more vital to performance of the drivers, I think, as well. And I think Loeb coming back, you know, what does he gain by coming back? You know, he's a 9-time champion, and, you know, is he going to beat OJ over the course of the season, having been out for a while? You know, it's going to be difficult for him, isn't it? And then it's all that time away from his family and all the preparation work that has to go in to the rallies. I think that's a big part that gets underestimated when you're talking about all the drivers coming back after they've left.
Absolutely. I can't see it happening. I just think it's one of those stories that I think I keep going round until the merry-go-round stops and drivers are confirmed. And I don't think either one of them. I wouldn't be surprised, as I say, as Rai said, and probably what you've just said as well, there. I wouldn't be surprised to see Petter in a test role, putting clicks on a car, or just coming in poorly for the love or whatever. My only little tiny niggly voice, and this goes back to some of the work I did back in the day with STI and some of the bits and pieces we did over in Japan. Petter is so well thought of over in Japan. And I just wonder whether having him as some kind of brand ambassador or something like that would sit really well with Toyota while they are grooming their own Japanese drivers, which we know they're working on. I just wonder whether Petter would come into that role, maybe like a brand ambassador, maybe doing some testing, things like that, PR work, maybe even running one of these cars almost in World Rallycross as well, because I heard some rumours 6 or 7 months ago that the Citroën would be replaced anyway next year, and I can't confirm or deny that. It was just one of those little voices that I heard. Maybe that's where the connection could come from, and he could do bits and pieces for Toyota as well. I don't know, purely speculating. But listen, boys, I wanted to crack on as well, and we talked about it last week. There's going to be three of these beasties on Corsica, and Jack, just with regards to the new i20 R5 high-end, I'm keen to point out that it's still very much a customer effort, not a works effort.
Yeah, it's always been the key thing down the R5 for high-end. I admit that, you know, pushing that customer side of things forward, it's something they've not done before, and it'll be the first time that a Hyundai non-WRT car will be in competition, won't it? So, it's, you know, they're definitely trying to push this customer side of things. But, you know, they've got three very capable drivers in there. Stefan Sarrazin, we know a lot about. You know, Kevin Abrink, we know a lot about. Fabio Andolfi maybe not so much, but has proved himself through the junior ranks in Europe. So it'll be interesting to see how Lurcher get on, and Andolfi's almost a story in itself, whether he can step up to the R5 and how he adapts to that. But, you know, three of them very talented drivers, and I'm sure we'll get a good representation of the R5 space.
Now, have we finally got the end to the running order story, Jack? I come to page 15 today of MN, and the running order solution draws nearer.
Yeah, I don't know if we have got a solution. Until it's written down on a piece of paper and everyone can see it, I think it's one of them stories that will keep moving. And it's, you know, as OJ quite rightly points out, it's something that we shouldn't be talking about, really. It's not a story that is good for the WRC, I don't think, or a debate that is good, because, you know, it doesn't bring any positivity to the championship, does it, at all? It's, you know, if anything, it's the opposite. But yeah, it seems like we've got some sort of fix from the meeting last month. Obviously, you can read about that in MN this week. There's a lot more detail on what actually constitutes the changes.
Right, I don't know whether you've read too much into this story, but we all want a common ending. And basically, I'll paraphrase the story slightly for our listeners, that basically the format that they're talking about is with regards to championship order on the opening day, with championship order revised for priority drivers on day two before reverse classification order, as it's been this season for the Sunday stages.
Yeah, but for me, it's the day two thing that just feels a bit contrived. I mean, why not reverse classification then for day two and three? It's the same as it is now. It just feels a bit contrived. We've got championship order on the first day. We've got reverse classification on the third day. I don't understand really reversing it on the second day. I know it equals it up, but why not run reverse classification for the last 2 days if that's what you're going to do?
I don't know, and I'm not as clever as you, so if you can't figure it out, I have no hope in help.
Like I said, it just feels a little bit contrived.
No, I understand what you're saying. Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. Now, there's a couple of things that have also come on with regard from the FIA, more stories, things that have been going on, and not to discredit what's been going on, Jack, with WRC2 this year, but they want to see a lot more battles in WRC2 story. That's at the bottom of the page there.
Yeah, I think, you know, one of the big things is the WRC2 changes next year, and the FIA are going to enforce that teams do, well, people competing in the championship are going to do at least three rounds together against each other, which is one of the big things we've missed this year, haven't we? We've talked a lot about some of the entries, but it's never quite happened, has it? It's never quite come to a head with all the drivers together at once and competing against each other. It's something that we've missed out a lot. We've had Elvin Evans, Timo Suninen, Pontus Tiedemann, Esper Kalafi all doing individual rounds and not really sort of coming together very often, which you can understand from their point of view. They don't want to compete against each other, do they? They want the best chance to take the maximum points from around and win the championship. So the FIA fixing that a little bit is something that's good. Whether that's the answer to do three rounds together, I'm not so sure. Forcing teams to do certain rounds is a good idea. Maybe it's just a conventional championship would work better, but I guess it does give the teams a certain element of flexibility, but then you take that flexibility away with making them do three rounds. So I'm not so sure that's the answer I'd use, but it seems to be a bit of a solution to the problem that we've had this year anyway.
This is the Absolute Rally Podcast. Team Coordinate, your perfect travel partner for all your European, Manx and Irish motorsport travel. Whether you're a competitor, marshal or a motorsport fan, we have the connections and discounts available for ferry travel to and from the UK. Team Coordinate, we can cater for individuals, teams or group bookings. Working with organisers of race, rally and classic touring events, we take away the hassle of travel with bikes, cars, trailers and trucks, accompanied or unaccompanied. Team Coordinate. Call Dane or Donna now on 44 1904 766787 or email us on info@teamcoordinate.com. This is Absolute Rally.
Welcome back to Absolute Rally. Now, I'd say something which I've spotted also at the bottom of this story, and obviously that was the main crux of it.
Yeah.
Kind of following on from what we were talking about last week, really. We spoke for the last couple of weeks with regards to entries into the, you know, the higher echelons of the sport, whether it be Group N or whatever it may be. And obviously the DS3s have been running both in Junior World Championship, and obviously we've had some slightly older competitors using DS3s at World Championship level as well. But WRC3 will be ditched from next year.
Yeah, we're not going to see WRC3 next year at all. And you know, the other major part of that that part of the story that I think is quite major is the fact that the FIA has confirmed that the junior ERC will not be FIA back for next year and won't leave for the World Rally Championship. So, you know, something we talked about at length when it happened, didn't it? We talked about some rumours a couple of months ago saying that the FIA would back the junior ERC to be the championship that leads into the WRC instead of having a junior World Rally Championship. But we've confirmed that that's not going to happen now. Next year's junior World Rally Championship will stay in the World Championship. So there's a lot of interesting things going on with junior rally, and I think we could talk about it all day, to be honest, where your entry points are. And we've done a good job over the past 3 weeks of talking a lot about where to go as a young driver, haven't we? But I think, you know, that the fact that the junior world championship staying in the world championship makes sense to me. I don't understand why you would take that away and put it in a different championship, because the drivers who do the junior world rally championship gain an experience of the rounds and get to write their own notes on those rounds, and then if they do make the step up to a more powerful machine, then they've got that experience of the rounds and they've at least got notes to go off, haven't they? So to me that makes perfect sense.
Right, have you got any thoughts on this one?
No, only that it has become a little bit confusing, hasn't it, again, for the casual viewer. We know that rallying is complicated anyway, and when you have the winner of a JWRC, you have the winner of the Fiesta Drive DMAT trophy, and you have the winner of WRC3, which can all be different people, then it isn't the simplest formula to follow. So some simplification, I guess, is good. Just as we were talking about, you know, whether junior world championship should go to European championship. I mean, I agree with Jackie. If you're going to have a junior world championship, it needs to be in the world championship. I just wonder if that's the FIA trying to add a little bit more weight to ERC, because since we've seen the manufacturers disappear from ERC, you know, from its heyday with Juho Annan and Chris Meek, Guy Wilkes, etc., it's lost a little bit of its focus, hasn't it, ERC? You know, it's slipping away into a privateer championship that, if you didn't have Kajtanovic there this year, you know, and looking up, I guess, as well, then it would be a bit thin on the ground. So I'm sure they're looking at ways of trying to bolster ERC, and I wonder if that's why they were thinking along those lines.
Speaking of ERC, it is Latvia this coming weekend. Of course, a friend of the show we had on the other week, Chris Ingram, can secure the junior title on this coming weekend. I think his nearest rival, Jack, needs to win, and basically Chris just has to finish.
Yeah, pretty much. I think, you know, it's quite a complicated scoring system, but I think the way it will work is if Chris finishes second or better, then he wins the championship. The only way you can lose the championship is if Marianne Griebel wins the event. There's some quick Latvian guys going to be there and register for the ERC, so Chris will be hoping that one of them wins, or of course he wins himself. But you know, it's a really interesting weekend for Chris. He's going to be under a lot of pressure. Obviously the prize for winning the ERC juniors is a drive in an R5 car, which will be taken up on Cyprus later in the year in just the start of October, Cyprus is. So yeah, it's going to be a pressurised weekend for Chris, but we saw him under pressure in Barham, and he performed fantastically there on the last round. So if you're a Brit, then you've got to have your fingers crossed, and you've got to be feeling quite good about Chris's performances this year and his chances in Estonia.
Absolutely. Yeah, I was just about to correct you, but Jack, you're far too quick for me. Boys, we've rattled through the headlines. There's lots of bits and pieces that I'd love to cover, but time is always against us. We're half an hour into this little chat of everything else, and the way any other business has gone recently, I'm conscious of our run over time these days with our any other businesses. So before we crack on, is your any other business, Jack, a short and sweet one, or is it going to be a debating point?
It's incredibly short, man.
You can get pills for that. Okay, Ryan Champion, and your.
I would say relatively short, particularly compared to last week's.
Right. Okay. Right, a couple of things I just want to rattle through. Congratulations again to a friend of the show, Brendan Reeves. Another win on the Australian Rally Championship last week, and. I was kind of going to do it as any other business, and you did shout at me at the top of the programme, but Neil Bates' son, Harry Bates, who's kind of gone through the two-wheel drive categories, there's some images, I don't know whether you guys are connected to him at all, there were some images of his Corolla Super 2000, which was the Oddman Super 2000 card originally, to say the least, back in the day, with the complete corner ripped off it, and it started day two and finished the rally, and there's been a little bit of I believe, with some of the competitors over there about whether he got extended time from the officials. I'm going to have the guys on from rallies. He'll tell us all about what went on there. But even so, ripping a cord for Super 2 car and turning it round and getting it back so it's square and back running again and back so it can finish an event, I still think is some going in 12 hours.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I'm glad you agree. Rye's not having it.
I didn't know if you, you know, you don't need us to tell you you're right, do you?
Yes, well, I do. I always need confirmation, right? I that's all I've done for the last 20 years of my life. I've seek clarification and just acceptance from Ryan Champion in my life. That's all I've done.
I don't know what to say.
We've got a siren again.
Go on, Jack. Paint the scene.
Paint the picture, Jack.
No, we're excited today, I'm afraid.
Okay.
I'm not on a valid date.
Okay, that's all right then. So I'm going to come to a couple of businesses very, very shortly. So we'll come to Jack Benyon's any other business first.
Well, I was going to do a bit of a rundown of Latvia and Chris Ingham's chances, but as soon as they've done that already, I'll keep my end of the business nice and sweet. And it's been brought about by our little chat at the start of this programme about the model that Ryan showed us. So my favourite rally car.
What was
model
her name again?
I own. What was whose name? Sorry.
what was that model's name again? I can't remember. Was it Julie or?
How many
well-known
models
sorry,
do you know
Jack.
Now called Julie?
I don't know, I'm showing my age.
Oh dear. Anyway,
go on, Jack, sorry.
No, you're alright. My favourite model is a plain white Metro 6R4, and the reason for that is it's a model of the car that Ayrton Senna drove in a test in 1986, and that's my two worlds colliding. I love rallying, and my dad is a big Ayrton Senna fan, and pass that on to me, so that's my favourite diecast. I'd like to see absolute listeners send in their pictures of their favourite diecasts and have a bit of a chat on Twitter or Facebook about what your favourite diecast is, and hopefully it'll give me some ideas to some to buy.
Have you noticed how we changed that from favourite model? We were going to get inundated with boobs and bums.
Yeah, like anybody who goes on Twitter currently is anyway. Go on, just follow that up then, Jack. That's your favourite model. And go on, fill the full story in. Where's the car now? What's it doing nowadays?
Oh, it's not on my... the actual car.
Yeah, the actual car. The actual car. It's obsessed by Senna.
I don't
want
to know about the model. I can describe my bedroom to you if you want, and I know where it is. I can, yeah, we had a chat about this, didn't we, not so long ago?
Yes,
about, Peter Smith of Swift Caravans is the current owner of the car, and I believe it's being rebuilt and refettled to Group B condition, so it'd be nice to see that back out, and obviously it's got a lot of history with Ayrton driving it, and I believe it was the Austin Rover Show car, wasn't it, that they took to various dealerships and stuff like that before, but Ryan, you'll know far more about that than I will.
Yeah, it was. I think you're right. It was their PR car, as it were. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. There you go.
There you go. Actually, do you know what? Right. It's funny you should mention that. It's a program that's been repeated several times on BBC Four, but it was the Group B program, and it was on again the other night.
Madness on wheels.
And yeah. And of course, right towards the end is a very youthful Malcolm Wilson, who is just debuting the computer vision 6R4, and of course you were having the little walk around it and stuff like that. And still to this day, I still don't know, and I may be well off on this, but I'm sure Ryan will put me straight, however they thought that car would compete with the Lancias and the Peugeot 205 T16s beyond me. Really, I when you put them all side by side, there was no way that car was ever going to be anywhere near them, in my honest opinion.
I guess that was the days before the internet and being able to find out quite so much information about your competitors, I would imagine. So everybody was probably planning a little bit more in the dark in those days.
I think so. Right, you're any other business, Ryan Champion?
Was Jack, was yours just a statement then rather than a question? Tony,
I'm just a call to the Absolute Rally readers and listeners, etc., to send in their favourite diecasts.
Good, and we'll pick that up with the model that we talked about earlier on as well. We'll tweet the picture and get everybody to tell us what it is and where from. I haven't got to any other businesses this week, Tony, but Gary Boyd sent me a message a little bit earlier on to ask you a question.
Oh, good, so, I like
right.
it.
obviously, Gary Boyd, a long-time listener of the show, spreading the absolute rally love across the world. He asked me to ask you, are you ready, Tony Simpson?
I'm listening, yeah. I'm nervous, but I'm listening.
What breaks first on a rally car?
I know why he's asked that question. I did an interview this morning for Bauer, which is the large radio station network, and I did it in the Liverpool studios this morning. And whenever you do these interviews, when I'm sure you've done this right and stuff like that, you go in, you're going to do 10 minutes, maybe 15 minutes, and you've got to be mindful that the host is a lovely guy and everything else, but you've got to kind of almost dumb down rallying. So he was asking me lots of questions. I was trying to keep it as simple and as succinct as what I possibly could. And then there's normally, what's the worst crash you've had and what normally breaks? And he went, now I'm quite superstitious. So he turned around to me and said, so what's the first thing that's going to break on your car? And I said, I don't really want to think about it, to be honest with you. So that's why Gary said that. He's obviously listened to what I said. Now, I'll answer it for our podcast. The driver.
Correct.
There you go. That'll be the first thing that breaks on Rally Isle of Man. It'll be the driver.
Hopefully before the first corner.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Having done the recce, mate, I think that my big concern is cooking the brakes. I think I'll be left foot braking for 137 miles non-stop.
So there you go. Now I'll do my actual any other business. And this okay. is...
Thanks for that, Gary.
This is a question to our listeners and now to both you, Jack, and Tony. Been rally drivers? Well, in inverted commas for one of you, anyway. Tony.
I was waiting for that. Thanks, boys.
What are your bucket list rallies? And I guess we've got to limit this probably to three, because there could be 33. And, you know, I was having a bit of a think about this. I've been lucky enough to do some great rallies over the years. So the likes of the Safari Rally was probably a bucket list rally for me. Barbados is a pretty special one. And actually the Manx, I mean, the Manx, we talked about it a lot, just a proper classic rally. So what have I still got on my bucket list? Well, top of my bucket list is Mull. I've got to do the Mull Rally. Everybody who goes, I've been there a couple of times, but never competed on it. Everybody who competes on it says it's the greatest rally in the world. So Mull Rally is definitely top of my bucket list, probably followed by Donegal. Never done Donegal Rally. And again, have been on a couple of occasions. Third, I could pick a number of World Championship rallies. I'd love to say I've done the Monte Carlo Rally, but I haven't. A few others I could pick as well. But what about you boys, off the top of your head?
I would go Finland.
Yeah, I have Monte Carlo stroke Finland written down, but
okay. If I'm forced to go with three, it would be Finland, Safari, and Monte.
Yeah. All right, Tony. I think yeah. the top of my list would have been the Manx, but as I'm going on, I'm quite happy to take that one off.
You haven't driven on it yet.
No, that's true. No. Well, I think I'd be terrified to drive on any rally, so having a bucket list for driving on three rallies would probably be quite difficult for me. But Finland is obviously one that everyone always wants to do, and is a big one, and the Safari as well. I think that's fair, but Ypres has always been one. There's certain things that are nostalgic to you as you're growing up, and definitely a couple of the rallies that were nostalgic to me growing up were the Manx and Ypres, so they're definitely two that I'd like to do. But gravel wise, Finland is got to be the sort of holy grail of rallying, hasn't it? I think
Ypres was very, very close fourth, to be honest. I ended up picking rallies which I never envisage now being able to do, if that makes sense. I could see me perhaps putting something together to do Ypres maybe next year, because we did threaten it this year, to be honest with you, but we decided to do the British Rally Championship
neither
instead.
Neither of you have Mull on your list then?
No, and do you want me to tell you why I don't have Mull?
It's a list of three, right?
Well, it is.
Yeah, okay. Okay, I have massive respect for everyone that goes and does Mull. I would love to go and watch it, but it's one of those rallies which, again, it's to say it's specialist, I think, is an understatement.
Yeah,
I think
you're right, but so is the Manx. So is the Manx. If you can manage to get around the Manx, Tony, I think you'll be all right on Mull.
We should have this conversation next week. Right, I'll quickly do my I've done most of my any other businesses. I've kind of thrown them in there as we've talking because you boys bollock me for having too many. So I'll be honest with you. I had Brendan, I had Harry Bates, and I had the Loeb Solberg stuff. I had the Group B program. I had Latvia kind of listen as well. Now, something else, somebody spoke to me the other day, and I'd forgot about this. And again, I could be opening a huge can of worms, right? But I hosted the awards for the Herefordshire Motor Club this year for the championship tie-ups and stuff like that. And I really enjoyed doing it. I've done awards for British Rallycross and for Monster Energy and things like that. And I kind of quite, I enjoy doing all the research about learning for the drivers and stuff like that. I'd love to do more. And if anybody's looking for an after dinner, I'm quite happy to come and do it. But where I was going to go with this, and my former producer from when we used to be Total Rally back in the day, and I are both massive fans of a program over here in the UK called Fight and Talk. Which is on BBC Radio 5 Live, and they've just returned the host there, a guy called Colin Murray, who's an excellent host, and he openly encouraged that program to go out and do live performances, and they were fantastic to go and watch live. And he contacted me the other day, and he still listens to the program from time to time, and he said, if you ever want to do an absolute rally live, I'd come and engineer it for you. And I said, right, okay. And if anybody would truly be interested in having an absolute rally live at one of their club events or awards or something like that, I don't quite know how we'd do it, but I'm just putting it out there.
Can I get some, maybe one of our New Zealand listeners or Australian listeners to be keen on this idea?
If they're prepared to pay the cost to get us over there, then yeah, that's a big difference. Yeah, Barbados would be mega. But I am up for trying to make this happen, and I don't know how, and I'd have to pull some serious strings, and I get some more people involved and stuff like that. But we could do what we do on the podcast, and we could do it live. We possibly could have some live guests. That would be a big ask, but even so, worst case scenario, even if we had them over the phone in an auditorium or something like that, and let audience members ask questions and things like that, I'm just putting it out there. Whether we could do it or not, I really don't know. But if anybody would be genuinely interested in having us do a live episode with them, get in contact with us.
Yeah, drop us a message on first, because I don't want any awkward situations about how much I'm getting paid. I think that should be dealt with by my people. So if you can speak to them first, that'd be great.
Jack, you had to ruin it, didn't you?
No, but I mean, I see where it's coming from. Because if we are going long haul, I don't like sitting at the back.
No, all right, boys. Well, I'm not being funny, but
if it's 2 hours, that's fine. But anything over that, then I don't want to sit the back.
Okay, all right. Well, maybe I could send you an air freight, put you on an aircraft pallet, and just strap you to it.
I'll send you my rider
with
though,
the equipment.
Right.
I'm not interested in your rider in any way, shape, or form. So anyway, that was my any other business. It wasn't quite succinct as in my head when I was thinking about it. But basically what I'm saying is, if you think you could fit an absolute live episode, absolute rally live episode into your club or whatever, or for an award, whatever it may be, I would be interested in trying to do this live with a live audience, because in my other walk of life, I am used to working with live audiences. So what could possibly go wrong? He says, there you go. I'm putting it out there.
I think it'd be a tough thing to beat on an event as well. If any events out there want to put up the money, I don't see why the three of us couldn't do that either.
I think it could be quite good fun. And I was going to say something, but I won't. It'd be inappropriate of me to say what I was about to say, so I won't say it. Anyway. Right, this is the end of the first section of the podcast, which has been an epic one, with lots of headlines, lots of news, lots of rumours, lots of rumours and things like that. Viewers, I nearly said then, which would be weird, which is kind of rumours and viewers. So there you go. We're going to go over to Colin McMaster, and we're also going to be talking to Mark Higgins next, who's going to be telling us all about Rally Isle of Man, which we've not spoke about too much. The reason why we haven't, of course, because we've got the king of the island who's going to be telling us all about it and how the deal came about and what he hopes to achieve. So, Jack, same time, same place next week?
Yes, same time, same place, I think, no problem.
I look forward to it. And Ryan Champion?
Yeah, more or less.
There's always
I'll be around at some point next week.
Okay, happy days. Listen, we'll look forward to catching up. But folks, sit back, relax, listen to what Mark Higgins has got to say, because it's a fascinating piece. We had a bit of a giggle with Mark as well. And then Colin McMaster, again, it's just the photographs and some of the stories he's got, because his relationship, of course, he used to share a house with Richard Burns and things like that. It's a really, really great piece, and it was great to have Colin on as well. So sit back, relax, enjoy, and we'll speak to you at the end of the podcast.
This is Absolute Rally. Team Coordinate, your perfect travel partner for all your European, Manx and Irish motorsport travel. Whether you're a competitor, marshal or a motorsport fan, we have the connections and discounts available for ferry travel to and from the UK. Team Coordinate, we can cater for individuals, teams or group bookings. Working with organisers of race, rally and classic touring events, we take away the hassle of travel with bikes, cars, trailers and trucks, accompanied or unaccompanied. Team Coordinate. Call Dane or Donna now on 441904-766787 or email us on info@teamcoordinate.com. This is the Absolute Rally Podcast.
And welcome back to the middle section to Absolute Rally. It's good to welcome the fastest man on four wheels around the Isle of Man, both sides of the road, both sides of the car. Mark Higgins, welcome back to Absolute Rally.
Thank you. Good to speak to you again.
It's now one question before Ryan Champion starts asking you stuff. Last time we spoke was probably just after the TT lap. Did you know that realistically you were going to have an R5 car for the Manx at that point?
There was a very small rumour of it, but you know what it's like until you actually turn up there on the start line with 5-4-3-2-1. You never sort of believe it's going to happen. So it was rumoured. And it's something I'd wanted to do. I talked about it at the beginning of the year. I think when we spoke earlier on in the year, actually. And, to get it to all happen, it's been fantastic. So, really looking forward to the Manx this year.
So, does this feel a bit odd, the fact that you're effectively Elvin's teammate? Have I got that right? Is it an Autotech car?
Yeah, we're both in Autotech cars. We are teammates for this rally, effectively. So, yeah, it's pretty cool. I mean, it's great having Elvin there with all his experience of the car. I mean, he's been driving it for, 3 or 4 years now with M Sport. So I'm going to try and get whatever information I can off him, because we haven't actually driven it yet, apart from a quick run at Kirkbride sort of airfield on a very British wet day. So, I could do with a few pointers.
Wow. Because, joking aside, you were always the man, and Ryan will back me up on this, because he was probably one of the ones that were chasing. You were always the man with the target on his back, and we were speaking to Craig Parry only a few weeks ago, and I said, what's it been like to effectively being, the boys with the target on the back, like back in the day of likes of Mark Higgins and people like that? So is it odd now? Does it make you feel a little bit old? Because it makes me feel very bloody old, to be honest with you.
What, when you've been rallying with his dad for the last 20 years?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, there is that. But it's great to see what the young guys have been doing. You know, what Craig's been doing in Finland and what Elvin's done in the World Championship. These boys are on top of their game at the moment, so it's just great. What for me is great, to go back to the Isle of Man, to do a rally with proper competition. And I think it's just going to be a good challenge. I'm going to really enjoy it. And if we can get on top of the car and things, hopefully come away with a nice result as well.
One man that is very, very envious is Ryan Champion.
I can imagine.
Go on, Ryan.
I am very envious, but I'm also equally excited to see how you get on for the over 40s. You know, because all three of us are in the over 40s Rally Drivers Club now. So I'm just...
Well, what I need to do, Ryan, is get them to put an over 40s class in, because we've got a good chance for that one.
Yeah, go have a Masters category, yeah. They do it every other sport. So
they do, yeah.
although, as we could talk about at great length, if we were in Italy, we'd probably still be doing the Italian Championship. But anyway, that's a different story. Great that you're going back to the Isle of Man. Obviously, it was your home. You know, sort of born and bred on the Isle of Man. You do know the island well, but like you were saying to me by message the other day, you're going to write a brand new set of notes for the rally. obviously the stages are very familiar to you, but you've done one day the recce, you're doing one later on this week. How have you found it going back over those roads you knew well quite a few years ago?
Yeah, I mean, you know yourself, Ryan, we did a lot of it in Group N cars, so you're going into a different sort of category of car, and I do know the nature of the roads and what's coming up next, but it's how you attack them first time out. And what's quite different this year, they've got this loop system, which I'm not totally convinced of. I think if we all get round it with a clean run and we don't catch any cars, then it's going to be fantastic. But the stages seem very different this year. They've cut out quite a bit of the more classic Nadgery stuff, and there's a lot more of the very, very high-speed stuff in there, the main roadish. A lot of the classic stuff that we'll both remember don't seem to be there, unfortunately. But on the other side, there's some fantastic bits of road in there as well. But it was all coming back to us, most of it. But there's, I think, three parts of different stages I've never been over before in my life, which is incredible that they've actually been able to find that on the Isle of Man. So fair play to the organisers.
Yeah, I mean, like you said, that's interesting to have a completely new section of road. But I think also for maybe people that are listening to this that don't compete regularly, even though you know some sections of those stages intimately, you still rely 100% on your pace notes, don't you?
Oh, definitely, yeah. And that's why, you know, I could have found old pace notes, but, you know, you develop things on in your subconscious, you know, as you get on, really, and you sort of develop your system. So I've done everything from scratch, and there's no way I could go over there without pace notes, not at all. You know, as I say, I know roughly that there's a junction coming up in about a mile and where that's going, but it's all that little, you know, the stuff in the middle, the medium speed corners, and that's where all the time's gained. We can all go around a flat corner flat. We can all do a 90 the same speed, but where you make the time is on those middle speed corners.
And there's lots of that on the Isle of Man, isn't there? Lots of blind stuff where you really have to do commit to the note.
Yeah, there is, and it was very overgrown in some areas on the recce, so, you know, that's going to make it interesting. But historically, we've always found that you've done the recce and the rally starts and they've cut the hedges, so we'll see what happens by Thursday.
Now, are you actually going to get a good run in the car on something representative, or are you going to go in a little bit blind, as it were?
That's my only little negative at the moment, really. We haven't had a chance. It's all been a bit last minute, so I'm not drove the car. I did drive it at Kirkbride Airfield for a little spin, just to have basically get my seat right. But we'll do the shakedown on a Thursday. But I think it's going to be quite busy because it's such a big entry that we might only get a couple of runs down the test stage. And something new to us now is we're all on the WRC type tyre, which I've never driven on before. So there's plenty to learn, but I've got a good teammate to follow what he's doing. And hopefully whatever he puts on the car, I'll sort of try and copy and maybe spend a couple of stages bedding myself in and go from there.
Yeah, I mean, you've obviously driven like a wide cross-section of cars in the Isle of Man as well, from World Rally cars, Formula 2 cars, and then, you know, latterly the Group N cars. So I guess it'll be quite interesting for you to see, obviously, the suspension on the modern cars is incredible, and one place that really tests the suspension is the Isle of Man. So it'll be interesting to drive a car with such, you know, modern suspension, as it were.
Yeah, I mean, and that's one of the things. The Isle of Man has got such a different nature of stages. You've got very wide open, then you've got very bumpy, so whatever you're going to go for is going to be a compromise. So as long as I think if I get a good feeling with the car and there's a nice base level that you know what it's doing, then I'll be happy, and then we can sort of play around with it a little bit. But I'm sure the settings they've got are very good. They're going to be a lot better than what I've probably had before anyway, so just get in and drive it and learn things and enjoy the week, really, because it's a long event. I've been eating the carrots for the night stages. Got the special glasses ready, and we'll see how that goes in the evening.
I'll tell you what, Mark, I was over the weekend. I did my recce at the weekend as well, and it's 8 years since I've done the rally. And I had forgotten, A, how fast it is, especially down through Baldwins. It was just mind-blowing, even in a KA. I felt like I was going quick enough in the KA hire car.
I think I did see you going the wrong way up the stage, didn't I?
I don't know whether it was me going the wrong way or whether it was you. I'm not entirely sure. Perhaps we'll debate that another day. But but they do turn around quite quickly on the bar. That's all I'll say. But the bumpy stuff, I don't know what stages you've managed to look at yet, but there were certain sections, especially as you go up through Druiddale and you start kind of climbing up towards the cottage, if you like, where I think you did the running commentary over it once. There was running water over the stage, and it was just relentless, the bumps. I had this car up on its nose bouncing sideways at a very low speed.
I think it's got bumpier in places, but then you've got that new road up over the top of the Slock, which is like a motorway. So as I said before, there's such a compromise of road surface and sort of conditions of the roads. It makes it a real challenge of event. And Baldwins, unfortunately, we only do it the once. That's my favourite stage, probably in the world, going down through Baldwins. And, you know, that's going to be at the end of the rally. So hopefully it's pretty close going into that one, and that can maybe help me a little bit.
Is it?
I should know what the car's doing by then.
Because that one stage, they've called it the classic stage, which, again, that was the other thing. My co-driver is from an older generation than me, so he was completely thrown because he's not been there for a few years either. And he's used to them being all, you know, completely different names, the classic names, you know, the round table and stuff like that. And he was completely thrown. But that classic stage, of course, it's got the Baldwins in at the end. It's got it's Druiddale as well. And that felt like about three, four different, completely types of surface in one stage.
Yeah, I mean, you get to the end of Druiddale and there's a sign of relief. It's always the last stage of the rally, so you make sure you haven't got a puncture or clip something going over that, because there's a lot of potholes over there. Then you're going down the steepest part of any stage on the island, which they've now taken the trees down on the right-hand side. That makes that a bit more scary going down Baldwin.
It was always scary going down.
It's even more now, Ryan. You want to see it now, mate? And then you've got, you know, the beautiful bit in the middle where it's sort of left, right, all the way through East Baldwin and West Baldwin. So, and then we finish on the TT course. I know that bit quite well.
Yeah, you've got a bit of previous there at the moment, haven't you, to be fair?
Yeah.
Just for the sake of our overseas listeners, because we're really aware of the fact we have a lot of overseas listeners and we do kind of get trapped in these things. You've competed all over the world and you've done stuff all over the world. So kind of relate the island and the stages on the island, the rally, to anywhere else in the world or even anything similar to it. Can you relate to it at all? Anything else that maybe our overseas listeners will be able to attach to?
It's very difficult. I mean, I think the people that have come over and tried to do the event, Armin Schwartz was one in 96, and he said it was the toughest rally he'd ever done. There's such a variety of road surface. In terms of getting a car set up, what you get in Ulster will not necessarily work in the Isle of Man. And also setups that you may have had, the European tarmac setups, there's no chance of them working there. Now, the modern cars have a lot more travel, so they've got more of a chance. But back in the early days, it was very much a one-off setup for the island, and we actually used like a gravel suspension over there to cope with the bumps. But then, as I say, you go into the very, very high speed stuff. But generally, the car's bouncing around all the time, very high speed, very quick direction changes, and it's just a very unique rally. And I think if you go back and watch the video of Snyers and the BM, that's a classic. Good junctions, plenty of action, and a very iconic rally. And we've been lucky enough to have people like Walter Roll, Larry Vatanen, Michel Mouton, everybody that was anybody came over and did the Manx back in the day. And it's good to have it back in the BRC again this year.
Absolutely. But it still scares me. Absolutely. Itless.
I'm trying not to think about it. I wasn't nervous till this week, and I'm really, oh God.
Do you know what? I was fine until we kind of did the recce, and we got to the end of the recce, and then we started going back through the notes, and I thought, I kind of flippantly said I was a little bit nervous last week. I was talking to we had Michael Paston on, of course, who's been going over making route notes and stuff like that for the event, and they'd been over 2 weeks before, and I said, you know, any advice? Oh, just go and enjoy it. You'll be fine. Of course, we go over, and you kind of throw yourself into the recce, and I got to the end of a 15-hour day on the Saturday. I went back to the B&B, which was the bizarrest B&B I've ever stayed in my life. If you're listening, right, you were lovely people. But nobody in the right mind should have a full-scale model of a Lancaster bomber outside the bedroom door, pointing at them hanging from the ceiling as you walk out to go to loo at 3 o'clock in the morning. I could have been German. I could have took offence to that. But that was true.
I should have had plenty of German.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, we must have done. But I got to the end of that first day, and I thought, what have I let myself in for? It's, you know, this is one of those rallies where, you know, we all want to go and try and do ourselves justice, and obviously, God, you've won it and everything else. But there's also, it's almost got like a feeling of, for somebody like me doing it as an, you know, an amateur in a front wheel drive Group M Fiesta ST, it's actually the mindset is like when I've done GB, and you've just got to particularly just get to the end of each day. You know, time's not even part of it, it feels like already.
Yeah, I mean, it's not really a sprint event. It's getting around, making the least mistake on tyre choice, and making the least mistake on every junction, and just getting a clean run through. You know, you can actually afford sometimes to lose a bit of time, and things happen. It's very hard in the car as well, because you're braking on bumps, so it's hard on transmission. I mean, Birdie Fisher, he tried to win that rally. It's the one rally he never won, and he tried so many times. And it is, there's always a sting in the tail. You've got that big last stage, so you've got to treat it with respect. But as I say, enjoy it. It's an amazing experience to drive the roads. I don't know how long we'll ever get the chance to drive these fantastic tarmac rallies around the world, and hopefully the Manx will stay for a long time. But make the most of it while it's definitely still
now,
there.
One last question from me. Is there a little bit of disappointment though you're not allowed to use the Subaru you used the other month?
No, I'll be well scared in that thing. I'm glad to have Arthur Horsepower, thank you very much. Yeah, no, that would be amazing to have that. I'd be quite confident.
I'm not surprised. But there you go. Right, have you got anything else for Mark before we let him get on with his busy day?
No, not really. I mean, I think just good luck, and we're all looking forward to seeing how you go. I mean, it'll be an interesting one for you, I'm sure, to see how quickly you can get up to speed. And I guess you're just going to see how the battle unfolds once you've got a few stages under your belt.
Yeah, no, Ryan, it's just great to get back out in a proper car and do things properly. So, I think everybody that does the Manx loves it very much. And it's just great to have a chance to do it at a good level again. So I'm really excited, and hopefully we won't do the old boys. We'll keep them proud, hopefully.
Mark, it's been great having you on, and you know, maybe this could lead somewhere. Maybe if you might get a lucky break and be in the British Rally Championship one day. You may even win it.
You never know. It's 20 years next year since 1997, isn't it? So that'd be a good talking point, wouldn't
happy
it?
Happy days. Listen, really appreciate your time, mate, and yeah. I'll see you over there anyway. We'll have a proper catch up when I'm over there.
Yeah, good luck, mate. Have a good one. And are you going over, Ryan? Are you heading over?
No plans to. So have a good weekend, and I'll be watching with great interest.
Well, start watching the second day time. Just leave the first one, all right?
Mark Higgins, thank you so much for joining us. Absolute Rally. We'll catch up soon.
This is Absolute Rally. Team Coordinate, your perfect travel partner for all your European, Manx and Irish motorsport travel. Whether you're a competitor, marshal or a motorsport fan, we have the connections and discounts available for ferry travel to and from the UK. Team Coordinate, we can cater for individuals, teams or group bookings. Working with organisers of race, rally and classic touring events, we take away the hassle of travel with bikes, cars, trailers and trucks, accompanied or unaccompanied. Team Coordinate, call Dane or Donna now on 44 1904 766787 or email us on info@teamcoordinate.com. This is the Absolute Rally Podcast.
Welcome back to the final section of Absolute Rally, and a bit of an honour, but a little bit of a privilege as well to have the Mac in McLean. We've got Colin McMaster joining us, who I'm sure you're familiar with his work. If you've seen an iconic WRC picture somewhere, he's probably taken it, it's fair to say. So Colin, for the first time under our new name, even though it is now 12 months old, welcome to Absolute Rally.
Thank you very much. That's quite a bigging up you gave me there. I much appreciated that.
But it's fact, not fiction. And the reason now I know it's fact, not fiction, because Ryan Champion told me it was. So Ryan is sat, he's in the starting blocks, and he's got loads of stuff he wants to talk to you about. So I'm going to hand you over to Ryan at this point anyway.
Well, it's great to speak to you, Colin, because you've been around rallying well as long as I have, and you've always been there taking some of the most iconic images we see in the various publications. I want to take you right back to the beginning. I know you've been involved in WRC since the 90s. How did you get involved in rally photography? Where did it all kick off?
Yeah, well, firstly, hi, Ryan. It will be based. You're dating us both back to last century. It's quite true.
It's unfortunately, it's true, yeah.
Yeah, I think my story is, for rallying, it dates back to a previous life as a circuit racing photographer, which is what I did after leaving college. I got a job at a photographic agency which specialised in motorsports. But at that time, the motorsports were all circuit racing. And from darkroom technician, which was my first job, I would progress to junior photographer, which in those days it was quite glamorous. It was British touring cars and a thing called Formula 3000. So I did quite a bit of international travel with that. It was, nowadays it's called GP2, but it was the support series for some Formula 1 races and a standalone international championship. But travel was what I wanted to do, and certainly motorsport is a great opportunity. But if you're really into your travel, forget circuit racing. Rallying's where you want to be. And so quite fortunately, to cut a long story short, the PR girl for ProDrive and a daily commute to work took her past my company. And when they signed Colin McRae, they needed a photographer. So she basically was looking up the yellow pages for photographers in the local area and knocked on the door. And, you know, the rest is history, but it all started through ProDrive needing a local photographer.
Now, obviously, as you've just said, you went then from circuit racing to rallying. So certainly very different in terms of a backdrop, and quite different in terms of how you go about capturing the action. That must have been quite a change for you, moving from circuit racing to rallying.
Well, one thing I'd say straight away is the principles are the same. And people ask me what makes a good photograph, and I would say the same thing every time, that in my eyes, a good photograph could stand alone without the car. So could you present somebody a nice picture with no car in it and say, yeah, that's a nice picture to look at, add the car and you've got something special. And certainly it's a big challenge in circuits to make something good visually, because it's full of fences, ambulances, the usual furniture you get there. But you can apply the same techniques to both circuits and rallying. And for me, rallying is mainly about the landscapes. However, it is one of the greatest action sports in the world. So you marry the two elements together, and the travel is a third element. It's I think it's the ultimate photographic sport.
Now, we look back on the time that you got involved in rallying with real affection. Now, it was certainly an iconic era for rallying. What any particular memories from those first few events you got involved with? What strikes you when you look back at the first events with Subaru?
I was the new kid on the block, so naive, because I knew nothing about rallying, and I was just this keen photographer, driving mechanics and seeing people mad, wanting to set up pictures all the time, try different things. And, you know, Colin McRae wasn't particularly into having his picture taken. So that was a challenge straight away. You know, he's quite shy. So trying to coax him into particular shots I had in mind, that was fun. And, it was all a great big learning curve for me working in a rally environment. You've got to, you know, you don't just go to the circuit and then walk out onto the track. You've got to find your locations, and so picking up the navigational skills was quite a challenge.
Now, you spent quite a lot of years covering the WRC on every event. Which events became personal favourites?
I'd say, you know, I like so many rallies for so many different reasons, and I don't really have a standalone favourite. For many years, I used to say Germany. It was people like that would take a step back and think, really, Rally Deutschland? So, yeah, it was, you know, for an asphalt rally, it was quite a photogenic thing with the Moselle Valley, and then they had these mad stages around the military area, the Panzerplatte, Baumholder. So, you know, I like that. I love the Safari Valley, as you well know, Ryan. It's an ace competitor yourself. I mean, that's everything's there for the photographer. It's beautiful to photograph in Kenya. I like the old Acropolis. I do like a muddy RAC or whatever you call it these days. Don't get me wrong, that was good. It's horses for courses. You know, I can find something good in every rally for sure. And sometimes, you know, I always say this to, well, I don't say it to my wife because she'd just get jealous, but when you pack your suitcase for Mexico, and it's March, and you've had November, December, January, February of winter in the UK, and you just pack your suitcase with shorts and t-shirts and sun cream. I love going to Mexico.
And now you certainly got to know rallying very well over the years. You talked about Colin there. You got to know Colin very well, Martin Rowe, but you became great friends with a special driver, our English world champion Richard Burns, and he was a good friend of yours, wasn't he?
Absolutely. You know, it's only like last weekend I was at the Goodwood Revival for the Richard Burns Foundation charity set up in his name, and so he's still a strong part of my life. And you know, he was the best man when I was married. We spent loads of time away from the events together, socialising, shared a house for a while, got to know each other's families really well. So yeah, it's an absolute privilege in my life to have met him, and an absolute honour to have been one of his friends, and they're just priceless memories now.
I particularly remember that moment, I think Safari, was it 2002, when Richard was trying to drag the three-wheeled Peugeot back into the service area and just couldn't quite make it, and you happened to be there to console him. That was a pretty difficult moment for Richard at that time, I think.
Well, I think it was a crazy rally, and everyone was having problems, because it was in an area known as Sussoir, which is the bottom of the Rift Valley, with proper long 120-kilometre sections, as they're called, sections and stages there. And everybody ran into problems. And then every day, when we first arrived in the service area, it was an old, it's a crater. The surface was hard-baked soil. And every time someone drove on it, it broke up and cracked, and it just became this volcanic dust bowl. And Richard wasn't the only car to get stuck going into the service park, but unfortunately for him, he only had three wheels on his wagon. And I think he was catching whoever was leading at that stage. And yeah, it was just the effort he went to get the car out didn't work. And, you know, I just saw him really upset, moping off to the service area, and put an arm around him and said, you know, there's always a swimming pool in the hotel and the bar's open. So it worked up a bit.
I'm sure he did. Now, as we've already mentioned, I mean, you've established this great partnership with Reinhard Kleine, a legendary photographer of the World Rally Championship. You know, how has that worked over the years? And again, when you first started that partnership, that must have been quite an honour to start working with Reinhard.
Yeah, I knew his work from magazines, in particular a racing magazine called Grand Prix International, which did Formula One, speedboats, and Group B at the time, rallying, and I was the buyer of the magazine. He was their rally photographer. And then I went into World Championship rallying. I never knew who he was. I never saw him. He was always out somewhere unique. You never saw him with the other photographers. Kept himself to himself, and, you know, he had his favourite hotels and watering holes that I didn't know where they were. So I never saw this guy until one day I stood in his way. That's how I kind of introduced myself, and he was ever so good about it. And you know, so that would have been probably about 95 96, so 20 years ago. And then last weekend, he, unbeknown to me, he popped up at Goodwood, and funnily enough, he said, looking at everyone dressed up in their military uniform, there was a flypast from a Spitfire, two Spitfires and a Lancaster bomber. He said, in his typical droll German way, he said, funnily enough, we don't celebrate the war as much as we like.
Now,
yeah, despite all that, we're still good friends.
And still produce fantastic work in the amazing calendar that comes out every year, as well as the lovely books. But one thing I wanted to ask you about, something that's changed massively in your time you've spent in high level motorsport is the technology involved in actually taking the pictures. And what sort of effect has that had, do you think? I mean, I guess ultimately does it make life a little bit easier over the years? I guess it must have done, but has that taken some of the classic skills away? Has it added something? How do you feel about the technology?
Well, what to say there? I mean, I'm currently writing a presentation. I mean, we talk at the world's biggest photo exhibition next week in Germany, Photokina, and that memory card company, Lexar. And exactly the question you're asking me, I'm asking myself. And, you know, I grew up taking pictures on film. And as I look around today, most of the current WRC photographers have never shot a roll of film in their life. And it, wow. It does change your thinking and your outlook and your approach. I mean, I was always told exactly how much it cost by my boss. I had one boss in life, and he would say to buy that roll of film to process it back in, I don't know, 20 years ago, that was £10. So work it out in today's money. And that was 36 exposures, Ryan. You know, some of the guys today, in a day, they'll shoot 1,000 pictures. I went to Le Mans 24 hours race. I didn't take 1,000, you know, enough rolls of film to make 1,000 pictures. Just no way. So, you know, you have to, the economics have all changed in that respect, that you don't shoot film, process it. And it's an instant world as well. You fill the internet with pictures on digital straight away, and we used to have to wait to build it.
Yes.
No, I don't get me wrong. I'm not a Luddite. I do like the digital world and the creative aspect, post-production, what you can do today is incredible.
Would you agree or disagree? Just listening there, again, it's quite funny you mentioned 20 years ago. I can remember being on a rally 20 years ago, and I've still got the pictures on that one of those muddy RACs, network queues, whatever we want to call it. And all it is, I've got probably somewhere in the region of 15 images of rear quarters of cars as they've gone past. Never really appreciating how hard it was to take those pictures. But pretty much what you've just said now, you know, camera phones and things like that, do you think there's some of the classic pictures or potential classic pictures are almost lost now? Because as you say, it was so precious for you to take 36 images, but now it's so easy to take 1,000 images in an hour.
No, I'd have to disagree with you, because I think the quantity and quality debate comes in here. I think there's some fantastic images today, miles better than we had in the past, honestly. You know, it's the creativity that's going into it and the thought process, because there's so much competition out there between the photographers. I think the pictures today are outstanding, no question about that. There's a little bit too much of the post-production manipulation for my liking, but that's all down to taste. And there is a modern taste, which Instagram and all those applications of phones have, you know, basically come in, and some people like it and they go for it. And the other thing is, with digital, you can shoot in the middle of the night and take an acceptable image. You know, you couldn't really do that in film. You set some flashlights up and maybe a tripod, and it was a little bit tricky when it got dark. No, it didn't even have to get dark. I mean, every single, I've got archive pictures from, you know, daylight rallies, and in particular the RAC, and they're pretty grainy, ropey pictures, to be honest with you. When you look at them,
and that would have been 3 o'clock in the afternoon on the RACs back in those days, wasn't even at night. Can I ask you something? Which obviously there's a subject which is kind of ongoing at the moment, and you've just mentioned about, you know, some of the new photographers, and you know, one thing that has come out recently is perhaps the adventurous amateur photographer getting photographers a bad name, I think it's fair to say, you know, trying to get these unique angles and perhaps standing in wrong places, stupid places, whatever way you want to describe it. How much harder does it make your job as a professional when you go to some of these events that, you know, not to be tarnished with those the same brush, I guess?
Yeah, there's a big difference between, this is in my eyes, between photographer and man stroke woman with camera. And then you're into a whole debate, aren't you? If it's bad behavior or something nasty happens to the person holding camera, are they a professional accredited photographer? And let's be honest about it, the word professional as well doesn't really mean very much today, because most of the people in rallying are taking pictures as a second job or a hobby or something. They can't really support an income for many people. That's the reality of it. So you need to do other things. So, you know, I don't really have a view either way. You know, the more the merrier, and it's nice if the people are out there photographing the sport, but the safety element is the most important thing.
again, that, but that comes from experience, I guess, doesn't it?
The last rally was Germany, the WRC. I set a remote control camera on a tripod on the outside of a hairpin, very fast approach, and Hayden Paddon wiped that out and smashed the lens. So,
well,
if that was a human being, would have been in hospital for sure. So, you know, there's a time and a place to use the right equipment.
Hayden's a friend of the show, and he will be on probably next month, so we'll mention it. We'll see whether we can do anything.
Can you tell him he owes me a 50mm f1.4?
I wouldn't hold out much hope, but we'll mention it. We'll mention it for you.
Well, funny on that subject, Cole. In this show as well, we're talking to one Mark Higgins, and I just wondered if at any point he's tried to kill you, either on a stage or maybe even in a bar. It could have been, but
Fifth Amendment on the latter. In fact, one year I broke down on the RAC. I can't remember, what do you call this rally? GB.
Day in Shore.
It's a hell of a long story, but I broke down at. What's the name of it? Margam Park, about a week before Carlos broke down in exactly the same spot, because I'd hold the sump on the car I was in. And that evening, I got the car. ProDrive took the car back to a little station near Oxford, rural station. And the boys doing the recce were moving up north. I think they were going to Donington Park or somewhere, doing the Sunday stage at Silverstone, whatever. Mark Higgins stayed at Burns' house. Well, I said to Mark, my car's about 8 miles away. He said, I said, could you give us a lift, a tow? Could you tow it back for me? He said, yeah, no problem. He must have thought he was doing that Isle of Man lap record in the Subaru, because I was hanging on for grim death behind him on the tow rope. And he went flat out. Didn't want to waste time telling me, and I was lucky not to crash the thing that had no engine.
Cole, if I can ask you one last thing before we let you go, because we're really conscious of time for you as well. Is there any events or any rallies you've not been to that you really wanted to photograph? Yeah.
Yes. I want to do the Dakar. Okay. That's the one. Anyone out there with like £30,000 to have some nice pictures, we'll do a nice little exchange there. I'd love to photograph that.
Is it? And is that? Does your inspiration to go and do that come from the images that you've seen that other people have done?
I've never photographed anything in sand dunes, proper sand dunes. So I think that's your best opportunity. Cars are pretty exciting to see, and Argentina is a fantastic country to go visit. So, and South America. So, and it's in December, isn't it, or January? So. Lovely time to be in South America. Yeah, that's my bucket list.
We'll see what we can do for you. We'll put out our listeners, see whether anybody comes up, puts their hand up. It's far more likely Ryan will find that type of money before other than me. It's not. I'm never going to find it. But listen, before we let you go, Cole, we do a little bit of a thing where we do any other business and any other businesses, anything, you know, that kind of we spot in the news or anything that's on our mind about rallying at the moment and things like that. And we're just wondering, our recent guests have kind of done their own any other business. Is there anything that you'd like to comment on, anything in rallying at the moment that's caught your eye?
Yeah, definitely. There's one thing. We haven't pre-prepared this or anything, but, you know, everyone talks about Group B and how spectacular and amazing it was. I think I'm one of the only people in rallying that finds nearly every single Group B car quite ugly. I don't particularly like them. And then, with the exception of the Peugeot, I like the Peugeot 205 T16, maybe the RS200, but that's pushing it, okay? When I look at pictures and I look at Finland today, the speed and of these guys today over the jumps, sometimes they're 3-4 meters high in the air. I've never seen a picture of a Group B car properly in the air, except maybe Pfaff in Portugal. The rest of the time, they wouldn't even clear Ryan's wallet. So all this spectacular Group B is the ultimate. Well, they were loud, they looked quite outrageous, they didn't go around corners, and they were quite spectacular. Totally agree with that, but today, to me, these cars are something else.
It's funny you should say that, because last week Ryan kind of opened a can of worms with his any other business, and it was about historic rallying today and the fact that some of these Group B monsters that were effectively banned in period are now being allowed to compete in FIA Historic Championships, and should they be? What's your thoughts on it?
Well, good luck with that, because they didn't go around corners 30-odd years ago. Yeah. So what are they going to do today? I don't know. I mean, everyone loves to see them. They do the sound. Don't get me wrong. You know, must be having worked in circuits so long, I must be deaf in one and a half ears, but the sound is amazing. I absolutely stand by that, you know. But I wish they could put the sound, that soundtrack on today's cars, and then I think some of these photographers would take a step back.
Are you excited by the cars coming in for next year?
Am I excited by the cars? Well, going on from what I've just said, you don't need any more speed. We've got that. It's fine. I would take the aero off, not add it on. And I spoke to Petter Solberg about this, and immediately it was first mooted what was going to happen. He said, they don't need to do any of that, just increase the boost, and then you'll get some dramatic, into the corners will be good, they'll sound good, they'll be popping and banging, scrubbing speed off, and it would have cost a fraction of what they're going to have to do now for these 2017 cars. Yes, of course they'll look good. I think I've seen the pictures of the Citroën, looks fantastic, so it'll look good, but will it sound better? Will they go more sideways? Not so sure about that.
There you go. I think that's a really good way to finish as well, by the way, because you've left it hanging. There's a question mark there, maybe.
Finish on the positive,
No, you've left...
I'm looking forward to it.
You've left us hanging on a question, which means we need to bring you back after the first two or three events next year, you see. That's what it is.
Yeah, well, I was told Chris Meek, if you get him on, he tells everyone, make sure you're at the first gravel rally with these cars. So that's Mexico.
You'll be there. You'll be right. Don't worry about that. Don't worry about that. Go on, Ray. Sorry, before we start wrapping up.
No, I was just going to say it's great to hear Colin's thoughts and a lot of the thoughts.
Yeah, I'm just going to get hate mail from the group B.
Ryan
Hart's the leader of one of them.
Yes, that's right. Yeah, you've just devalued his 6R. we try and encourage a bit of debate on the show, and we certainly debate next year's rules. That's something we talk about, and the Group B thoughts are an interesting one, and we totally agree that the speed today's cars are going at and the commitment of today's drivers is just incredible.
It is. So, Colin McMaster, thank you so much for joining us on Absolute Rally, and as I say, the door is always open whenever you want to come back. As I say, maybe after Mexico, maybe we need to mark that in the diary, right? We need to get Colin back after Mexico, the first gravel rally. Yeah, that would be great. Folks, if you've got any thoughts on what Colin said, you know how to get hold of us by now. If you don't, I'll be very, very surprised. facebook.com/Absolute Rally or on the Twitter, you can reach us at @Absolute_Rally, of course, and let us know what you think what Colin was saying, really. And Colin, what's your Twitter handle, just so people can send you abuse with regards to your thoughts on Group B?
I don't know. Colin McLean, I think. I'm not sure. I think you put COL McLean, one word.
There you go.
Pull me out there, Tony.
I think I buried you, mate. I apologise. Folks, this has been great, and it's been a joy, and again, we do appreciate the download. We will be back same time, same place next week, and again, spread the word, tell your friends, Absolute Rally here every Wednesday or Thursday in your little podcast downloady hole, whatever you want to call it. And if you do listen to us on iTunes, if you could perhaps leave us a little bit of review, it does help when people do searches out and things like that. When people put motorsport in and put rally, it does help the podcast pop up in people's search engines and things like that. But we will be back next week, both Matt Ryan, myself and Jack, and who knows who else we'll have on as well, but it'll always be a busy one. And same time, same place next week. Thanks for the download, folks.